Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
Are you ready?
Are you ready?
Ready.
You ready for the partner?
Go! This is the MLS Show. On the BTP Network.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Pitch's MLS Show. I am Scott Nichols. You're one of your hosts for this informative, educational, and enlightening MLS podcast. And with me, as always, is Otis Earl. Otis Earl, how are you doing?
Good, Scott. Good to be back talking MLS. Some interesting results this week, and definitely some big news in the league. So looking forward to talking it out.
Yeah, let's get into the meat of things straight away. I mean, let's talk about Orlando. Now, I think Orlando is for real, okay? Four wins in a row at home. They just beat a good New York City FC team on the road at Yankee Stadium, where it's very difficult to win. I mean, New York City FC just lost three matches there all season last season. They have a good record out there. And Carl Larin likes to hunt against NYCFC. Nine goals for Larin in his last seven games against NYCFC, of course. Otis, is Orlando legit?
I think this is the first year they look like they could be real contenders and definitely someone that can push into the playoffs. I think what now Jason Kreis has got is he's got his team how he wants them to be set up. Defensively, they look very solid in terms of as a back four. The game against New York City, it was definitely one of the picks of my games for the weekend, New York City-Orlando game. And I just thought it was interesting. We know how Vieira likes to play with his New York City team, very possession-based, like to get at you from the wings, Jack Harrison, Kyrie Shelton, David Villa. There's a lot of pace, a lot of dynamism, a lot of dynamic movement from the forward players. And I just thought it was interesting how Kreis set up, especially given his, with his two fullbacks, didn't give Jack Harrison much space. His fullbacks, Toya and Suter, the left and right back, didn't give any space to Jack Harrison, who's usually where, when New York City is starting to, begin their possession and want to sort of enter the last third of the pitch, Jack Harrison's the guy they go to. Jack Harrison's the guy who can drop a shoulder and whip in a good ball. And I thought it was a bit interesting how it's the first time I've really seen a team go to New York and set up in that sort of way defensively and not give the Vieira's team anything. And I definitely thought it was definitely the first time I've seen Orlando this season prove that they can go there and do it in the big games, in the ugly games, when it's not always going to be easy. They're not always going to have complete control of the ball, but they've shown they can win ugly, which is definitely something that a team that wants to be in the playoffs or a team that wants to win MLS Cup should be able to do.
Yeah, I think I read they completed about 67% of their passing, and I think they were outshot as well in the game by NYCFC. But look, it's not always about that. You know that as a pro. It's sometimes the best thing that you can do is just keep working hard and keep working hard. And that's what Kreis had his team do. If you look at Giles Barnes, the whole game, Giles only had seven completed passes in the whole game. It sounds like a really terrible game from a number 10, doesn't it? However, what I'll say is that if you watch him, he is harrying and closing down. He's going after Perlo. He's going after Maxi Rodriguez. He's going after, Maxi Morales, sorry. He's going after everybody. You know, he's having a really, really, really incredible game, just not statistically. And I think that's one thing that we can sort of say for Orlando, that they're going to be incredible, but maybe not statistically. You know, maybe it's going to be a bit like they're going to be the sort of boring Orlando, you know, of MLS. But hey, I don't think their fans will care too much if they're boring, but they're winning. But talk to me a little bit about Carl Larin, because this kid, I mean, six goals in six games, another game-winning goal today. In his last game too. What's changed with him? Is he a big-game player now? I mean, he always scored goals, but is he a big-game player now?
Well, we were talking, weren't we, last podcast about Kyle and sort of how he's getting this interest from abroad. And was it Everton? Sorry, his name's been linked with...
I think, as
we said then, the more time he gets as a player, the more time he gets as a striker, the more chances he gets, the more different defensive structures, defensive players he plays against. He's just going to keep sharpening his tools. And I think this is a big year for Carl Larin to go from what we know him as a rookie, as the sort of shining light rookie in the league, to becoming not just a mainstay MLS player, but the sort of MLS player that we're going to be talking about DP contracts further down the line, that we're going to be talking about getting interest from Europe. And if he wants to keep doing that, then these are the sort of games where he's going to have to prove that he can play with the big boys, and he can win games for his team and put his team on his back, so to speak. Because if he keeps performing like he's doing at the moment, then there's no reason why right now he can't be one of the best strikers in the league. And for someone his age to have that sort of pedigree, so to speak, is only gonna help him.
I mean, look, you have the attitude and the mindset of a professional soccer player, Otis. All right, mm-hmm. So why don't, like, it describe to me what it's like to have that kind of expectation on yourself? Because you know you were drafted real early. You know you were drafted by an MLS team, and you know you played in college as well. Like, and you were a good player, a great player, maybe one of the best on your team. How do you feel sometimes like you had to take the team on your back? And you know, and how much pressure does that add to every performance? Or do you think somebody like Larin just relishes that?
Well, I think, Scott, what I think is a big thing is every season you go back into preseason. So when Carl Larin's showing up to preseason camp this January, it's another season of him being in that locker room, another season of him being that starting striker on the team. And that, after a while, when things start going right and you're banging in the goals, and you get that sort of familiarity, like, yes, I've done it on the college level. Yes, I've done it at whatever level it was before I got to the professional. And now it's like it's almost like it's all piecing together. And for a striker, you ask any striker, he wants to be scoring goals. Yes, you want to be doing your part tactically and defending well. But at the end of the day, if you're not scoring goals and your team's even winning, you're not going into that locker room happy. And when I watch Carl Larin, when I see the way he celebrates when he scores goals, when I see the way he walks on this pitch, there's almost this sort of arrogance, this swagger about him that you want your striker to have, that any great striker has. And I think, like I was saying, the more time he spends there, the more time he spends in the club, the more of a, he's going to start to feel this sort of, like he's really a necessity for his club. And that's something that I think down the line is just going to allow him for his performances to just sort of go on and on and on. And hopefully more and more goals.
So, and you know, that's you know, I don't think anybody would argue with that. You want your strikers to be a little bit arrogant. I mean, look at Zlatan Ibrahimovic, for crying out loud. I mean, he might be the most arrogant of them all, but guess what he does? He backs it up, right? So, All I'll say as well on Orlando, Jason Christ, how much of a difference has he made? He replaced a man that you know fairly well, Adrian Heath. And yeah. So, look, under Adrian Heath, we already talked, they had some defensive struggles, Orlando did. I think it's pretty fair to say that and pretty obvious to say that. But the only thing, you know, the spine of this team, look at how they've built. You know, they brought in Bendick from Toronto, Will Johnson, Jonathan Spector rejoins, and now you have this Tommy Redding kid. He's just 20 years old, playing alongside Spector. Look, and also, another surprise with them, Nocerino. Who we all thought would be a fabulous player in MLS, sort of faltered a little bit, you know, didn't really do a whole lot, and now he's becoming one of this more subtly sort of, you know, influential number six type guys in the league. I'd like, you know, your thoughts, Otis, on what sort of Christ does different to Adrian Heath, and if he's not doing anything different, then is it just a case of maybe these players can relate to Heath more? Maybe they buy in, Christ more. Is it? Do they maybe just buy into Christ's methods a bit more? Do you think?
It's funny, when I was in preseason camp this past preseason, just gone with New England, you were hearing word through other players that Christ had got to Orlando and he was so strict on. First thing he did when he got there was he was strict on his fitness. He got his guys fitter than, he wants his team fitter than any other team in the league. And I know players who have played under him at Salt Lake, and I know players who have played under him when he was at New York City. And his team, what he wants from his team every week is to be the hardest working. And that's, well, that's running, that's tracking down, that's making runs off the ball when your team also has it. He wants a way for his team to be dynamic, and he wants his team to be fit and working hard. And I just think when you've got a new franchise, like Orlando, let's be honest, Orlando in terms of the MLS is still a new franchise. When you've got a new franchise, I think you need a culture. And I think maybe that was something Adrian didn't quite have before he was thrown into the situation where he had players that weren't really comfortable with each other, but Kaká maybe wasn't happy, wasn't feeling completely settled. And it was difficult for him to really find the right team, find the right balance to allow them to win games and make the playoffs. But I think what Kreis has done is he's gone in there and he's created a culture, which is of this team that's going to be sound defensively and work its you-know-whats off to make sure that they're getting results every weekend. And I think that's given Orlando like a different edge. It's given them a different... Now you look at them and you see a team that kind of, like I said, wants to win ugly, and they can tackle you, they can harry you, they can press you. And I just think now that they've got this identity and this sort of culture within the club, they know now how they win games. They have an identity. They know how they can get results. And hopefully, if Christ keeps this up, then it's a season that I think a lot of Orlando City fans should be excited about.
Yeah, currently top of the East, 15 points, which makes them the second best team in MLS right now, behind you-know-who, the Portland Timbers. But they do have two games in hand on them. 2.5 points a game they're averaging right now. No ties, one loss, 5 wins. I was raving about Atlanta United. And look, I'm still raving about Atlanta United. I love Atlanta United, how they play. I think, you know, again, another awesome win this weekend. But, does Jason Kreis's Orlando City have a little bit of a Mourinho-Chelsea about them? You know, I mean, look, hey, they're not winning games and smashing teams, but they are scoring goals and they're not letting in goals. In fact, I think I'm right in saying that they have the third, I think it's the third best defense if you go by the expected goals metric. And also, if you just look at the table here, FC Dallas and Sporting Kansas City 3 each, and then Orlando at 5. So something's going right. Let's see if they can keep it up. But what about their opponents, Otis? New York City FC. Currently lying 6th in the East. I'm not too worried about it. 3 losses, 1 at home, 2 on the road. You know, what do you think New York City FC has to do just to sort of solidify? Because, you know, we're always a little bit sort of wishy-washy with New York City. You never really know what you're getting. They're a great team, but, you know, what do they have to do to shore things up over there in New York right now?
I think, like you said, very wishy-washy. There's an inconsistency about this New York team where I think if you catch them on the day, they're always beatable. They remind me a bit of Arsenal in the Premier League. When you when you sniff chances against this New York City team, I still think defensively they're not sound, they're not solid. And to me, it might be personnel. I'd love to see New York still play with I know they're experimenting with this back three, but I still think they need someone, perhaps next to Pirlo, who's like a serious holding defensive midfielder, who's going to win the ball, who's going to tackle, who's going to set his team up, be his team's engine with a bit more legs and a bit more pace and dynamism, that I think will help them not only defensively, but then moving into their attacking play as well, starting off plays from deep. I just think they miss that in midfield, and they look like it's very easy to get past the midfield and start running in the back four. You watch a lot of games at Yankee Stadium and you see attacking mids and wide players and strikers just running at their back three, so to speak, now. And I just think they do miss a player to sit in front of the defensive line that can just sort of sweep things up, like a little cleaner, I like to call it. Someone can just come in and just nip the ball away from an under 10 just before you starts turning, or nip the ball away from a winger as he starts getting on a run. And I just think those players often go so unnoticed. And I know we love in the MLS, we love our DPs and we love our big players from Europe scoring goals, but you can't forget about those kind of players, and it's those kind of players that will end up helping you win a championship.
Yeah, look, two of the 3 losses that they've suffered this season to Orlando City, you know. So, I mean, I guess that sort of bodes slightly better for New York City, because Orlando's a good team, and I wouldn't say the bad losses. The other one to DC United, not such a good loss. A team that they beat 4-0 this season already. So they're kind of, look, I get what Vieira's trying to do. And I was talking yesterday with the MLS show on Ball Street about how Vieira's doing very well with what he's got. And I think that he's a good coach because he's never had that Premier League experience. You know, he's never had that European coach experience. He was with City's Manchester City's youth team. But ultimately, his best way of doing things is, let's get what I've got and make the most out of it. And I think for the most part he is. But you're right. I want them to be more dominant. You know, players like Jack Harrison, Andrea Pirlo, even Tommy McNamara, even, you know, your David Villa, like all these guys. You know, you think they should be a little bit more dominant, especially with Maxi Morales. How do you envision them becoming that? Is it literally just, you know, that one guy who's going to sweep up the balls in front of the defence? Or do you think perhaps they need a little bit of a midfield dynamo? I mean, I think Maxi Morales is supposed to play that role, but I don't know if he's the guy. They need an N'Golo Kante. Where do they get him from? I don't know.
Well, we all need an N'Golo Kante, Scott.
it's true.
Like, yeah, it seems the midfield area is definitely a cause of concern. And I think it's going to be interesting how he deals with injuries and when, as the season goes on, how he sets up his team. But yeah, I think moving forward, New York fans, that's something that they're going to have to address at some point if they want to be a team which could and should be at the top of this league and competing for titles.
Yeah, I'm sure they want to be out there with the Red Bulls every time. I mean, you look at the season starts, you know, the Red Bulls have lost three games. I mean, I know it's only one extra win that they have over New York City FC, but they cannot be happy that they're already 5 points off of the top in the East already. And look, New York's a city that demands results. It demands wins. It demands attention. So, you know, I'd expect them to play like that. And you're right, in that game against Orlando, look, Donny Toyer and Sutter, they absolutely neutralised Jack Harrison. And Orlando's game plan was simple. Shut them down, get it out to the wings, cross it into Larin, and look, it worked twice. So so good for them. Anything else that you want to add on NYCFC, Otis?
Nope,
nothing you want to add. Okay, that's great. So when do we start to panic about the Galaxy? When do we start to panic about the Otis? Look, LA have lost 5 of 7 games this season. 3 of those are at home at StubHub. 3 out of 4 games at home have been a big fat loss for the Galaxy. Otis, what's going on, dude?
This was always going to be a testing time for Galaxy, Scott. It was never going to be easy. I call it the post Bruce Arena era.
Yeah.
Bit of a mouthful, but I think Kurt Arnolfo, he's got a very, very, very difficult job on his hand, maybe more difficult than he himself might have thought. This is a Galaxy team that I think for the first time in 5-6 years is really, really in transition. I think they've lost some big players. They've lost some key players.
Robbie Keane, for one.
He comes out, yeah. Robbie Keane, Donovan, Beckham. They lost a lot of their big players. It all sort of happened very quickly. The Galaxy team we remember from 4 or 5 years ago is not the Galaxy team it is now. It's not being coached by the same person, and still the style of play and the identity is something that I think they need to. The Kurt Arnolfo is going to have to try and figure out himself. There was an interesting moment in the watching the game, the Galaxy game, when Kurt Arnolfo brought off. It was Boateng. Brought him off in the first half. And I always think, yes, sometimes you go into games and tactics change and things happen. But it was just a sign for me, when things aren't going well and you're a club like LA Galaxy, which we all know is this huge franchise out here, and you're playing one of your big rivals, West Coast rivals, Seattle Sounders, and you're making a first half sub that early, bringing off Boateng, I think... If you're the owners, you're the technical director of LA Galaxy, you're looking and you're thinking, wow, we've been preparing all week for this game, one of the biggest games on the West Coast, so to speak, traditionally two heavyweights in the MLS. And it almost looks like you're not prepared, you're not tactically ready, you're not ready to go out there and do your job. And I just think that was kind of, it's testing times for Galaxy, and I didn't think that helped.
Yeah, look, I mean, it's been said on several different outlets that the players don't look like they're playing for Kurt Arnolfo very much. And I understand the Galaxy's wishes to stay within their, you know, their system to bring Arnolfo in. Of course, he was the assistant and he helped out with LA Galaxy 2 as well. But sometimes I feel like that holds clubs back. I mean, I think it's holding Barcelona back, this constant need to hire from within. So maybe if this is going to be a trend for the Galaxy, maybe they should try and break that. Look, Kurt Arnolfo, he's done... It's still early, but, you know, LA Galaxy fans aren't going to be impressed with 3 out of 4 home games as losses. They're not used to that, because last season, under Bruce Arena, the Galaxy may not have had the most stellar season, but they only lost 1 game at home all season, and that's how you get away with being kind of wishy-washy on the road and still making the playoffs, still giving yourself that opportunity to get into MLS Cup and win it, you know. Look, they forget Minnesota with 24 goals conceded for a second, because there's some, you know, some strange results in Minnesota, and I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt, but the next worst teams to Minnesota are the Union with 14 goals conceded, and then the Galaxy with 13 goals conceded. Yeah. So they need to... I mean, Yella Van Dam, you know, is either not doing the business back there, or he's on an island on his own. When I watch him play, they don't look like the LA Galaxy team that I'm used to watching. They don't. And look, missing Robbie Keane and Bruce Arena is huge, because they haven't been replaced, and you can see the effects on this team. And I'll be frank, I'm not convinced about Arnolfo. I thought that, you know, they might go after someone like Siggy Schmidt. I know he's the from the big bad, you know, area of town up there in the Pacific Northwest in Seattle. But, you know, I thought that they might go after someone like Siggy. And I think that now he's struggling. Now that Arnolfo is struggling, I think that they might start making some moves towards someone like Siggy. Do you not think?
I think he'll be given, you'd like to think, well, you never know in this business, but you'd like to think that Kurt will be given the time to be able to put his own ideas in place. Maybe bring in one or two fresh faces that he thinks that can help build his team. But I definitely think it's going to be a transition year for Galaxy. They don't look like that same club that almost had this arrogance and this swagger about it. Like you'd go to the Home Depot Center and you knew you weren't getting anything. They'd keep the ball, they'd tie you, they'd stretch you out, they'd tie you in that Los Angeles heat. And I just think the Galaxy, they need to work back towards that, but it's definitely going to be a transition year. But yeah, seeing them lose games 3-0, which was their worst loss since Portland in 2015. I was actually at that game. That's their worst loss since 2015, and that's just to see a club as big as Galaxy struggle like that is not something that I as a fan of the MLS would like to see.
Yeah, they're a storied franchise, you know. They're one of those clubs where, you know, you sort of expect them to do well all the time. I mean, look, they're one of the biggest clubs in America, if not the biggest. And I'm sorry if that sort of offends a few other fan bases, but it's true, you know. Wake up and smell the MLS Cups, am I right? So it's look, I listened to Corner of the Galaxy podcast, in preparation for today, and Kevin Baxter and the guys, they do a great job. I've listened to them on and off anyway, but I wanted to see what they had to say about Arnolfo, and they spoke to Taylor Twellman. And look, he said the energy looked good in practice before that embarrassing 3-0 loss to Seattle at home. But the reality is, in the game, the energy may have looked good, but in the game, it didn't look so good. I mean, they didn't look like they were up for that at all. And that first half substitution, like you say, sort of just underpins the whole sort of mysterious myriad of emotions that people are currently putting on the Galaxy, and they're trying to, you know, and the Galaxy are trying to work themselves out of. Look, I'm not convinced about the Jermaine Jones-Pedro partnership. I don't think Pedro looks up to it right now. But, you know, but I think a lot of foreign players have a transitional period when they come to MLS anyway. And he's also come in, like you say, at a transitional time for the Galaxy. I mean, look, there's a lot of bright spots still. Look, they have a guy in Romain Alessandrini. He can prop him up when times are tough. And look, he's in the prime of his career, and he's an exciting player. He actually thinks that this move is going to help him get back into France's team. He was right on the cusp of the national team underneath Didier Deschamps. Look, you know, guy is talented. So he's here not just to sort of like peter about and try and become, you know, another Jovinko and, you know, just be happy being the best player in the league. He wants this to accelerate his international career, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, and he's an exciting player. They still have Dos Santos. They still have Leggett. But look, Anelfa's got to get him by the scruff of the neck and back him into corner or something, because they don't look like they're playing for him right now. And on that, you know, is... Look, let us in to the little for a little secret here, you know, and you know, you don't have to say whether it's happened to you personally, but if you know players that do, you don't have to mention their names. But do players, I know how we've talked about playing for a coach up, as in Pereja can make you play 100% better than you are, but is the opposite true as well? Do players kind of play down for some coaches? Do players actually stop playing for coaches? Or is this a myth that we just don't, you know, that we keep perpetuating?
No. I think that's definitely true. I think you can lose the locker room as quite as easily as you can gain the locker room to be on your side. And that's one thing that it's a results business. Once results start going wrong, then people are going to start turning their heads, looking to pass the blame on whether it's the coach or your striker's not scoring, your centre-back's not defending well, your goalkeeper's making mistakes. Everyone's going to start to look around at one point. And if the players feel like they're not getting the most out of their training sessions, scouting, the things behind the scenes, then it's all going to become ugly. And I just think, I have a question for you, Scott. How do you feel the balance of soccer, so to speak, in Los Angeles is going to go when we're going to get this new franchise, LAFC, with this beautiful downtown Los Angeles stadium? Going to make it very much a Hollywood club style. And then Galaxy in this transitionary phase where they're not quite sure what they're doing, who their big players are. How do you feel like that's going to affect things in Los Angeles in terms of looking forward towards the future?
Oh, it's going to be huge. Going to be huge. I mean, you have to think that, like you say, LAFC have now seen what Atlanta have done and how they've built, and they're probably going to go the same way about it. Look, it's a strange time for the Galaxy to be in transition purely because of this. You'd think that they would maybe time it a little bit better, right? You'd think that they would time it so they were on the up and rising when LAFC came into the league, so they could put them down in their place. You know, we are LA. This is LA. It says it on their shirts, right? Those little patches. This is LA. You know, look, it's going to be great for California and great for LA in the sense that, you know, they have these two rival teams not too far from each other. So hopefully we'll get some really great atmosphere down there, some really great games. But they got to watch out. They got to watch out because, like we keep saying, they're the most storied franchise in MLS, the biggest club in MLS, and they have, you know, look, it's easy to stay a very good team. But once you fall in MLS, once you fall, as the Chicago Fire are finding out, you know, it's tough to get back up there again. And not just the Fire, but the Dynamo too. You know, they're both finding that it can take a few years to rebuild properly. And that's even with a couple of complete, you know, get rid of everybody and bring a load of players back in, especially at Dynamo. So, I'm confident that they can turn it around. But but I don't think I'm confident that they can turn it around with guys like Kurt Anelfo at the helm.
Yeah, I do. I definitely think it's a transitionary phase and something that it's going to be an interesting year for Galaxy, what they do moving forward.
Yeah, and well, look, hey, just to, you know, end things a little bit here, what I'm going to say is congratulations to Minnesota. They kept a clean sheet. Isn't that great? Minnesota kept a clean sheet, Otis.
It's been a long time coming. But yeah, no, it was good to see them win at home, you know, against the Colorado team that I knew they could get a result against. And it's definitely something that now, hopefully, they can kick on and Adrian Heath can sort of inspire some confidence in them, which would be nice.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know all about Adrian Heath. Tell us what he's like as you know, not necessarily as a coach, but a person, because obviously players buy into the coach, but they also buy into the person. And look,
go for it.
I mean, look, he seems like a really good motivator. Yeah. Am I right about that? He seems like a great motivator.
He is. He's definitely a people person. He's definitely a good man manager. He's good with his players. I think that's. Or sometimes you just have to be. You have to be a bit careful in this. I think sometimes you don't want people to be taking advantage of you. And I know Adrian isn't. But you need to get that balance right with the players. As much as they want to play for you, as much as they're willing to almost see you eye to eye as a friend, they still need to have that fear factor. You still want to be scared to get a rollicking from your coach if you know you didn't go out and do your job on the weekends. This is a young Minnesota team with a lot of young players who don't necessarily have MLS experience and pedigree. So I think it's going to be testing times for Adrian to help these guys through, help guys like Ibarra, guys like Christian Ramirez. These are young players who are going to face things this season that they haven't before in their professional careers. And there's going to be times where they're going to have to look to their coach, look to their manager, their man manager, and he's going to have to inspire confidence and belief in them when there are times when they might not even believe it themselves. And that's going to be one of the many difficulties and challenges that this Minnesota team are going to face. But a 1-0 win at home against Colorado, that's a good platform for them now to go on and hopefully start picking up some points.
Look, if you were a Minnesota United fan, mm-hmm. and you said to them, or I said to you, I should say, that after 8 games played, Minnesota would have 2 points more than the LA Galaxy, I think they'd have taken it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they have. Look, I mean, there's a couple of strange losses in there. 5-0s, you know, 6-0s, whatever. You know, it doesn't matter at this point about whether they scored or not, because literally they were getting shelled. But look, I mean, in the games that they haven't lost by a long, long way, I mean, look, they tied 2-2 at Colorado, they won 4-2 at Real Salt Lake, they tied 2-2 at Houston, 1-0 at Colorado. So there have been games here. You know, they did lose the first 3 games by quite a big margin, but they seem to have sorted it out. I mean, they've conceded, it looks like, at least 2 goals in every game apart from the win at Colorado. So they do need to get that under control. But look, whether they will or not under Adrian Heath is another thing. Remember Adrian Heath, we talked about him at the top of the show with Orlando City and how their defense was the worst last season, the fourth worst the season before. So, you know, hopefully Adrian can turn that around for them, you know, sort of get them at least challenging for something because, you know, on the face of it, look, we joked about how bad they were and I have joked several times about how bad they look. But something's happening, something's turning around, and they're averaging the same points per game as Real Salt Lake and Vancouver, and they're averaging more a game than Galaxy and Rapids. So let's see. I don't want to write them off just yet. I'm not saying they're going to make the playoffs, but maybe they won't be the worst team in MLS, but a team that I do think is going to be the worst in MLS, just to round it out here real quick, is the Philadelphia Union. I mean, what is going on there? Alejandro Bedoya, speechless. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, look, they got a little bit unlucky not having Piatti get sent off for the tackle on Bedoya that he did. He sort of drags his studs down his legs. For those of you who haven't seen it, it's not pretty, and it's one of those challenges where, look, we know Piatti's not a dirty player, but look, it's still a sending off offense. You know, it's late, it's high, it's studs in someone's calf. He's got to go for it, and then of course he scores the goal. So How do you figure this out if you're someone in Philadelphia, Otis, from a professional point of view? Because they haven't won a game. They've drawn 3. They've lost 4. 4 of those in a row, I might add. And,
did they not look like a team that, in the second half, it looked like a team that they knew the worst? They almost didn't know how to be ahead. Suddenly 3-0 up, and they looked like they were so uncomfortable as a team being ahead and being in control of the game, that they invited the pressure that Montreal brought, and you can't do that against teams like Montreal because they'll pick you apart. You can't give Piatti that kind of space. So I just think there's definite pressure on Jim Curtin. We both know that, and you can't be 3-0 up in games and giving away 3-0 leads. It's gonna be it's going to be difficult for them to overcome this. They got to look ahead to their next fixtures and try and put it behind them. But that's definitely something that they've got to use as a learning experience, as a learning curve, because you can't go on. If this is all I'm saying, if this is happening in Dallas and we're 3-0 up and then end up the game 3-3, I'm not looking forward to going to training Monday morning.
Yeah, I bet.
And none of those Philadelphia Union players should be looking forward to training this week, because they should be getting ran and they should be getting punished almost for thinking that they can for letting a lead like that go away, because that sort of thing, that's poor game management, and that's switching off mentally, and that's lazy, and you can't be doing that in this league, because you'll just get, against the good teams like Montreal, you'll get pushed aside.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, look, Montreal, not necessarily known for their scoring than they are the defending, and they come back and they tie that game from being 3-0 down. There's some question marks for me.
In terms of Union as a franchise, like, where do you see... Is this just not the same thing that we're so familiar with seeing from them?
Yeah.
In terms of a franchise, Phil needs to make some strides. There needs to be some sort of improvement. It just seems like it's the same thing every season at the moment.
Well, I think I used to live near the Union, and you know, when I was first in Philadelphia, the area at least, in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania, they were a playoff team. You know, they had a great, you know, they had Danny Califf, they had Sebastian Letou, you know, they had Connor Casey. Look, you know, they had a few good guys, and you know, maybe a few of them were a bit yard dog esque. Like Danny Califf, but look, they're just not the same team anymore. You know, they brought in Chaco Maidana, and then they shipped him out again. You know, they thought they had the savior in Andre Blake. He's a wonderful goalkeeper, Andre Blake, and he's still young. But is he a good enough goalkeeper for him? Sometimes I don't know. I think for the most part he's quality, but there's times where I watch him and I just think you can tell that you're young. So he's a work in progress. But you know, their DPs are Alejandro Bedoya and Maurice Edu. I mean, that kind of says all you have to really know about, you know, Philadelphia. I mean, I'm just looking through their squad now. Players like Raymond Gaddis, you know, Fabrice Picot. You know, I mean, Jay Simpson. You know, not really guys that inspire any sort of like wonderment. I mean, even Charlie Davies, to be honest with you, at this point in his career, I know it's wonderful what he's done and come back from that devastating injuries that he suffered. But look, it's not a team that I look forward to watching. And I thought the appointment of Ernie Stewart was going to change all that. I honestly did. You know, not as a coach, but as one of the sort of senior staff there in Philadelphia, I thought that would change. You know, they have some exciting players in Rosenberry and Yarrow, albeit defensively. So look, and Yarrow is a big miss for them. Let's be clear about that. That is a big loss. But I just don't know what to do. Like when your main centre forward is CJ Sapong, I mean, you know, you can't be expecting too much, can you? I mean, so we'll see about the Union. Maybe they're the new Chicago Fire for a couple of years. Maybe they need to sit at the bottom for a bit until they get a really big DP. But unfortunately, I think that may have been Bedoya. So we'll see what happens. I just think that this is a club that screams disorganization to me at the top levels. Look, maybe it's just not something Curtin is able to deal with. You know, maybe it's out of his hands. You know, you can only do so much as a coach. All right, so just to round the show up a little bit, Otis, I know you've been watching this weekend very closely. Who are some teams that you want to give some honourable mentions to this weekend before we wrap it up?
Looking back on the weekend, Scott, I think the three I'm going to give honourable mentions to: Seattle, with their away win at Galaxy, like we spoke of, Orlando, away in New York, and then Dallas, my first love, as we know, my first MLS love, home to Kansas City. Three massive wins for three teams that are going to have their eye on the MLS Cup, and with the way they're playing and the way they're set up at the moment, they have no reason to think why they shouldn't be holding it come the end of the season.
Oh, look, and here's the other thing about that. Dallas has a very tough game at home against Portland Timbers this weekend, so make sure you don't miss that. Dallas are the lone unbeaten team in MLS right now, and probably playing another one of the best teams in MLS, so that should be an absolute barnstormer. It's goodbye from me, Scott Nichols, and it's goodbye from Otis Earl over there in California too. Otis, where can people find you on Twitter?
OJL3 on my Twitter.
And you can find me at Scott Nichols, and you can find us at Beyond the Pitch. You can find us on SoundCloud, you can find us on iTunes, you can find us on Audio Boom, anywhere that you can download a good podcast or a bad one. Thanks again for listening. Good night.
Hey, everybody. My name is Brian Dunseth. Next week, I'll be joining Scott and Otis on Beyond the Pitch's MLS show. Make sure you don't miss it on Beyond the Pitch. Now, we're talking football.